Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The state of our union is only as strong as the state of our families.
The pro-choice position at its very core is a position of bigotry. When you divide the room or the womb based on subjectively chosen arbitrary standards, you no longer have a commitment to human equality.
In the day of judgment, I don't think that the Lord is going to say, well, you may have celebrated these blasphemous cartoons, but at least you upheld free speech.
Jesus really is the quarterback, not Perry Noble. But Perry Noble, by doing what he's done, not only set up an end run around Jesus, he started playing for the other side.
Confessional Lutheran Deadheads, love, issues, etc.
We hear a lot about the megachurch. This is a now commonly understood term. Technically speaking, the megachurch, at least as defined by those who do actual number studies of the landscape of American evangelicalism, is a church that has at least 2,000 people worshiping in a week, in any given week. Now, by that standard, there are a lot of megachurches. By that standard, a lot of churches that consider themselves megachurches aren't as well. They're just large to medium-sized churches. But is this thing, the megachurch, in its previous incarnation, which was one church getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, or in its most recent incarnation, one church getting bigger, then giving birth to a bunch of little churches, satellites, not exactly daughter churches, more like, well, they don't exist in any real sense. Sometimes they're just screens with a bunch of seats, movie theaters, more or less, where you can watch what's happening at the main the center of the solar system where these satellites are orbiting. Is this here to stay? It certainly is a trend. 1 in 10 American Christians attend a satellite church of some form or another, either the mother church or one of its satellites. Does that mean that this phenomenon, the megachurch, is with us and we just might as well get used to it? Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Shane Rosenthal will join us here for the next half hour. We're going to talk about a recent Slate magazine column on the future of the megachurch. And then Pastor Tom Baker will be alongside. We'll teach a Sunday school lesson on the little children in Mark chapter 10 with Jesus. Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel. That's about the last half hour of the program. Join us for the next hour with questions or comments. 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or use our comment line, especially our beloved on-demand listeners, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Shane Rosenthal is a regular guest. He's producer of a weekly syndicated talk show called The White Horse Inn, assistant pastor at Christ Presbyterian Church in St. Charles, Missouri, and director of the Friday Night Forum. Shane, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd, good to be with you.
Do you agree with the Slate article, at least in the kind of the bare bones claim, that in one form or another, the megachurch is here to stay?
Yeah, I do. I think that it's just become part of the furniture of modern Christianity. You know, there was a lot of talk about reforming Catholicism back in the 1500s, and I think Roman Catholicism is here to stay. In the same way, I think a lot of the abuses that you are trying to correct on Issues, et cetera, we discuss on White Horse Inn. I think that there will be buyers that, you know, the Joel Osteen types, or even the more traditional evangelical model of multi-campus megachurch Christianity, I think will be here for a long time. I think the last time I looked at the stats, I think something like 90% of American evangelicals go to churches of over 2,000 people. I mean, that's where the majority of them are camped out.
Why is that? Why? And this is not, there are really two phenomena going on here. One is the growth of larger churches, kind of the big getting bigger. But then it's also been, and it's very well documented, the result of transfer growth from smaller churches. Mm-hmm. That is, small churches either go out of existence or get smaller at the, and this is happening, this growth of the larger churches, at the expense of the small to medium-sized churches. What is driving that? Is this a cultural thing generally, or is it something about American evangelicalism?
Yeah, I think I think it's both. If you look at the overall trend in big box stores, you know, your Home Depots, from the small mom-and-pop hardware stores, that trend is following the same trend from small churches to big churches, partly because you go to the big Home Depot or Lowe's or Walmart, Sam's Club, you kind of get everything there. Everything, they have put a lot of money into marketing. How do I make this, you know, the one-stop shop for everything? And there's a great scene in the movie You've Got Mail where Tom Hanks is sort of the owner of the big sort of bookstore chain that's going to be the one-stop shop for everything. And he plops into this neighborhood where there's a small mom-and-pop bookstore where Meg Ryan is there. And she's got expertise about children's books. That's her specialty. But the big box store sort of putting her out of business. As it does, she makes her way to the store at one scene. And she is sort of listening into conversations where someone's asking a very simple question about a simple children's book. And the employee there at the big store does not know the answer. And she tearfully gives the answer. And that's I think, what's going on in, as we shift from the smaller churches with expertise to the kind of store that has it's everything to everybody, but it doesn't have any expertise in any particular thing. And that is the same thing that they're describing in the world of bookstores is happening in American Christianity in terms of the evisceration and the loss of content of things Christian.
Some are just big and getting bigger. Kind of the almost comical example is the largest megachurch in the United States, hands down. Joel Osteen's big church down there in Houston, Texas. To my knowledge, I don't think that there are any satellites of that organization. It kind of is built to be the mega cruise ship of churches in a lot of ways. And then, and this is addressed
to his satellites are actual literal satellites, and it's beamed through all the televisions across the country.
That's true. Yeah, he owns literal satellites. the other end of that is the church that gets big and then goes multi-site, which is not the same thing as giving birth to daughter churches. Churches have done that for, well, since the Acts of the Apostles. What's the multi-site phenomenon?
Yeah, so there are a number of churches. I actually remember watching a movie in the late 80s. I think it was Harrison Ford. The movie was Mosquito Coast, a bizarre movie. But it was sort of critical of televangelists who then reported their missionary activities, but when you went to one of their missionary locations, there was a slow panning, you know, into this church where you heard the preacher preaching, but then you get inside the church and you finally see that there are a few natives in this hut with a TV and they're watching them on satellite. So I thought when I saw that, I was a new Christian when I saw that, I thought, well, that's kind of a farce. I mean, it's not really real estate, but it's really happening. So you have the personality-driven mega church model where it's not so much about the message as it is the personality. And the personality is such, just like we're attracted to radio personalities or authors. So you have that model, attached to churches. So you have the Tim Keller. Tim Keller is one who's resisted this trend, but I believe. But there are others like Mark Driscoll, who, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about, who you go to one campus and there you're actually watching on a TV screen what's happening at another campus because it's a series that they want to put on all the satellite networks, so the satellite churches. And therefore, the actual sermon that you watch is of another church campus in that city.
And this is the logic here is that what one does not get, or perhaps cannot get, in the megachurch, the church that gathers in one place in the thousands, one can get in a satellite, albeit via video feed. But right. You can also get kind of sitting closer, getting to know the actual people around you. Maybe, just maybe, the pastor might recognize you or know your name, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it also solves the problem of, you know, the megachurch, whatever particular denomination, Acts 29, whatever kind of network it is, it's downtown, and people live in the suburbs, they live in this part of the town, they live over here, and so you're putting them in the local areas, but they still have the access to the new church that everybody's talking about. So it's a satellite campus, it's closer to your area, and yet it's you're connected to that new hip thing that's going on. I actually experienced a little bit of that when I first converted. I was actually raised Jewish, and I converted to Christianity out of high school. And I made my way through the hip, cool church in the Southern California area called Calvary Chapel. Now, the pastor, Chuck Smith, was a kind of a celebrity pastor, and he was actually broadcast on television. So there were some Sundays when I would go to church, and I would find that they actually blocked out the sanctuary because there was no more room for sitting. So sometimes we were forced to go to the overflow room where there were a lot of people watching Chuck on these big screen TVs. And so it's just one room over. Well, after a few Sundays like that, because I was kind of a late sleeper, I ended up being late a couple times, I decided, you know what, if I'm going to be in the overflow room, I might as well just stay home and watch him on TV. You know, it didn't take a long time for me to realize that I don't have a relationship with these people. I'm a new Christian. Nobody's discipling me. Nobody's recommending that I get baptized. It only took me a year and a half or so before I realized I needed to find a real church.
Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the Slate article that we're talking about here on the megachurch. The modern megachurch can't really die. That's because it's not just one church. Talking about the multi-site model. I mean, it sounds like it has its problems cut out for it, especially if you can get just as much staying home as Shane did. You want your pastor to be famous and be on television, put him on television. Guess what? People will stay home because they have a television in their living room or perhaps even in their bedroom. Don't even need to get out of bed. And you pretty much have the same kind of experience as you would sitting in the overflow room or many satellite churches. But does this also make it invulnerable? Is Mars Hill kind of a head scratcher? Why would this mega church and this multi-site mega church shut down, at least the home base of it shut down? Are they able to die? We'll talk about that question with Shane Rosenthal of the White Horse Inn on the other side of this break. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Classical Education 101. The principles of classical education are time-tested teaching methods used in select public, private, and charter schools across the country and fast becoming the preferred method for all parents. What about classical Lutheran education? What are these time-tested methods? Come to St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois, on Saturday, January 31st at 9 a.m. For more information, call 618-633-2209.
Oh, morning star, morning star.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues, etc. Shane Rosenthal is our guest. We're talking about a recent Slate magazine column on the future of the megachurch, coming to the conclusion, not us, but the Slate magazine, that the megachurch in one form or another really can't die because it isn't just one church. It's more than one, whether it meets in one place or a multi-site kind of a situation. What do you make of that conclusion there? And, you know, really the anomaly, the outlier that the Slate article deals with here is something you mentioned earlier in our conversation, Shane, and that is Mars Hill, which to everyone's surprise, and I suspect there's a real reason for it, decided that its main campus was going to disband after the scandal with its pastor, Mark Driscoll.
Yeah, I actually visited one time at Mars Hill, the main campus in Seattle, and I was actually thinking that I would get an opportunity to see Mark Driscoll in action, and I was a little disappointed that they had someone else in his place. And this particular message was your standard, you know, evangelical, practical teaching. This is one of the things that makes this whole kind of movement, the big box church movement, it's sort of focused on the Christian, what you talk about a lot, preaching the Christian life rather than Christ. And there isn't there's no assumption of knowledge. It's just sort of accessible to everything. And so for a while, though, people would have that experience where they, you know, Mark Driscoll is the cutting edge new guy, and people want to hear him. And well, they, you know, he has 9 campuses in the Seattle area, so let's put him on the video screen so everybody who goes to one of the campuses can't do that. Well, it's now, you know, turned out to be a flash in the pan. Now his name, because of the plagiarism and other scandals, is not as revered. So they're losing money in droves. And this is one of the problems when you tie your church to celebrity, because celebrities, when they're raised up as heroes, they will ultimately fall. And especially in the culture of celebrity that we have today, that's not a good model. I think what we've done is we've taken even those churches, there was a slight interest in even Reformed theology. They were more Baptistic, but certainly with regard to salvation, Mars Hill kind of leaned in that direction, although it also had some charismatic interests. But we were hopeful that they were going to continue down the path of Reformation rather than sort of the emergent direction. But unfortunately, it's not merely the content, it's also the sort of method, and the method that they're attracted to is sort of that Charles Finney excitement sufficient to induce conversion. You know, you've got the rock band pulling it all in, great music, the cool buzz, and light teaching about how you can have a better life.
Okay, so let's pursue that kind of rock star pastor scenario again, because it's a difficult one to avoid. Perhaps one becomes a victim of their own success. Now, I'm pretty sure Mark Driscoll started out aspiring to be a rock star. That's just my personal assessment of him. But some don't. Some just you mentioned Chuck Smith before. The church just grew. He was just a hippie who loved Jesus. And then the next thing you know, he is a rock star pastor and handled it better, way better than a lot of his imitators, his more recent imitators. But is that, in a sense, an inevitability when a church gets sufficiently large or extensive in terms of the multi-site?
I do think that it's certainly the crutch. You know, the big problem is exactly what I experienced. I wasn't being discipled. So the average person who goes to a mega church environment ends up not really being pastored. And that's the thing you hear from Jesus in the end of one of the Gospels, where it's Peter is being asked by Jesus, do you love me? If you love me, feed my sheep. It's that care for him, concern for the sheep. And if the in the megachurch world, you can kind of come in and go out. It's one of the reasons it's attractive is because you don't have really accountability. And people, if you go to the smaller churches, you kind of feel that awkward. Are they gonna talk to me? Do I have to, you know, say hi? You're more. It's more communal. But that's the model of Christianity where you have people looking out for you. I mean, I was in and out of this megachurch for a year and a half where no one knew my name, and I wasn't being discipled. And what they usually say in the megachurch model is the small groups are where it's at. The downside with that is you go to the sort of worship experience thing on Sunday morning, it's more of an experience centered in light Bible teaching. Small groups are where it's at. That's where you get connected, they say. What the problem is, it's small groups is where it's at, but the small groups don't necessarily have any expertise in the particular field. It's not necessarily seminary-trained pastors. It's, you know, someone who has an interest in the issue of the Daniel diet plan, or even if it's a biblical book. It's not. It's kind of like the way I talk about it is it's the difference between self-diagnosis. If you have a disease or disorder, you got to go to the doctor. You're self-diagnosing on the internet. That's like reading the Bible on your own. And then the next level is looking online at a group, other people who have my symptoms. There's another step you need to go to, and that's going to see a doctor, a professional. And that's, in the church analogy, that's the pastor who's looking out for your soul. And that's what's missing in a lot of these churches.
So do you think that we started out by talking about how the megachurch is, for good or for ill, it's here to stay for the foreseeable future. Do you think that, as Slate Magazine has come to the conclusion, it really can't die? It's hard. It's very hard to kill, as to use the words of the author there at Slate.
I don't know about the, you know, long term. I don't see it dying anytime soon. There was an author we interviewed a few years ago who wrote a book called Quitting Church, Julia Dewin, and she was making the point that the megachurch model is dying. And I think she has a point that there are a lot of people frustrated with it, but the problem is it's so me-centered and it attracts the narcissistic sensibilities that a lot of people come in through the revolving door, so it's always filled. One of the things I love to do as a father is I love to take my kids to churches different than the ones we worship at, so that our kids kind of get an understanding of what's out there. We went to a megachurch here in St. Louis, and there was this one of the things they had was a skit with this guy with these big glasses on with something blocking the glasses. And all around him, he couldn't see things to access, like this thing that said car, vacation, a girlfriend, lots of different things he couldn't find. And then finally, he took these things out of his glasses, which ended up being dollar bills. And the person said, see, he has blinders on. And he, once he gave the money to the church, then he could see his blessings. My daughter at the time was probably 7 or 8. She said, it's like I was in kindergarten. That sort of, first of all, it's Pelagian. It's all about money. It was lowest common denominator, but it was very well packed. Because it's fitting for a TV generation. I don't see it going away anytime soon.
But I guess that kind of raises the question: are we really talking here? And I'm not talking about the individual members, but I'm talking about the organization, mm-hmm. the whole entity of the megachurch, in the worst possible case scenario, like you just described there, where it's pedantic, it is boiled down to just this, not even light biblical teaching, it's just light moralism. It kind of aimed at the church good, something else bad.
Yeah.
Is it the walking dead? Is it, in fact, doesn't matter whether the organization continues to grow, is it, in fact, what the church is intended to be by Christ? I mean, he even has a harsh word for one of the churches in the book of Revelation, dead even while she lives.
Right. Yeah, the candle snuffed out. I actually recently went through Harry Blumeyer's book, The Secularist Heresy, and it was amazing to read that book, which was originally written in the mid-50s, and he updated it for the American edition in the 80s. But basically, he says something really amazing in that book, something to the effect of that today's churchgoer, and in the 1950s in England, in English context, today's churchgoer is no longer likely to come away from church wondering, has the sermon got any connection with the secular world? He's more likely to ask, has the sermon got any connection with anything else besides the secular world? And so he asks, can we be so obsessed with being relevant that we forget to be Christian? And I think that's the question you're asking. Have we forgotten to be Christian? So he concludes by saying, the outrage is being committed daily in our midst wherever we find a deluded Christianity that's presented without reference to baptism, grace, regeneration, without reference to the incarnation, atonement, and redemption, without reference to the church, the sacraments, the Holy Spirit. You know what? As I survey the megachurch and the satellite megachurch world, I don't hear any of those terms. And I think Blumeyer would talk about that as a secularist problem. It's a problem of a deluded Christianity that is very in touch with being relevant in the secular world outside, but it has lost its own compass, and it no longer knows what it means to be Christian.
I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is it is altogether possible in maybe even the average megachurch that you have described there to attend, perhaps even regularly, maybe even have walked the aisle a time or two, but really know very little about the content of the Christian faith.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Meg Ryan's frustration was in the movie You've Got Mail, because she has this wealth of expertise of children's books, and she came to this big box store where there just was an evacuation of the knowledge of those basic things in that sphere. So if you take that analogy, that's exactly what's happened, and it's accessible to the average person off the street, but they don't grow beyond a certain level. It's pop, it's light, and it is not able to sustain a Christian walk.
Shane Rosenthal is producer of a weekly syndicated talk show called The White Horse Inn. He's assistant pastor at Christ Presbyterian Church in St. Charles, Missouri, and he's director of the Friday Night Forum. Shane, thank you very much for being our guest.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
You will find a link to The White Horse Inn at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. When we come back, Pastor Tom Baker is going to join us. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson, just a few little verses in Mark chapter 10, Jesus and the Little Children. Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel will be our guest right on the other side of this break, live this Monday afternoon, January the 26th.
Hey, St. Louis, how would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
This is Pastor Tyler Arnold at Christ Lutheran in Platte Woods, Kansas City, Missouri. We are privileged to serve our Lord in word and sacrament through the historic liturgies of the church. Do join us for divine service at 8 and 10:45 and adult Bible study and Sunday school at 9:30. Each Wednesday evening, we have Vespers at 7 p.m. Our address is 6700 Northwest 72nd Street, or call us at 816-741-0483. You can find us on the web at ChristLC.net. Come and be our guest at and with Christ.
Imagine SteadfastLutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub. Your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm, so check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Those beautiful notes were just the beginning of We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God, Concordia Publishing House's debut CD collection from Pastor Stephen Starkey, one of the most significant Lutheran hymn writers of our time. For a limited time, save 10% when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music, brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.